escape. When this was a hotel, Jace said slowly, they must have gotten their deliveries here. I mean, they wouldn't have brought things through the front door, and there's no place else for trucks to pull up, so there must be a way in. Clary thought of the little shops and bodegas near her house in Brooklyn. She'd seen them get their deliveries early in the morning while she was walking to school, seen the Korean deli owners opening the metal doors set into the pavement outside their front doors so they could carry boxes of paper towels and cat food into their supply cellars. I bet the doors are in the ground, probably buried under all this garbage. Jace, a beat behind her, nodded. That's what I was thinking. He sighed. I guess we'd better move the trash. We can start with the dumpster. He pointed at it, looking distinctly unenthusiastic. You'd rather face a ravening horde of demons, wouldn't you? Clary said. At least they wouldn't be crawling with maggots. Well, he added thoughtfully, not most of them anyway. There was this one demon once that I tracked down to the sewers under Grand Central. Don't. Clary raised a warning hand. I'm not really in the mood right now. That's got to be the first time a girl's ever said that to me, Jace mused. Stick with me, and it won't be the last. The corner of Jace's mouth twitched. This is hardly the time for idle banter. We have garbage to haul. He stalked over to the dumpster and took hold of one side of it. You get the other. We'll tip it. Tipping it'll make too much noise, Clary argued, taking up her station on the other side of the huge container. It was a standard city trash bin, painted dark green, splotched with strange stains. It stank, even more than most dumpsters, of garbage and something else, something thick and sweet that filled her throat and made her want to gag. We should push it. Now look, Jace began, when a voice spoke, suddenly out of the shadows behind them. Do you really think you should be doing that? It asked. Clary froze, staring into the shadows at the mouth of the alley. For a panicked moment, she wondered if she'd imagined the voice. But Jace was frozen too, astonishment on his face. It was rare that anything surprised him, rarer that anyone snuck up on him. He stepped away from the dumpster, his hand sliding toward his belt, his voice flat.
Is there someone there?
Dios mío. The voice was male, amused, speaking a liquid Spanish. You're not from this neighborhood, are you? He stepped forward, out of the thickest of the shadows. The shape of him evolved slowly. A boy, not much older than Jace and probably 6 inches shorter. He was thin-boned, with the big dark eyes and honey-colored skin of a Diego Rivera painting. He wore black slacks and an open-necked white shirt, and a gold chain around his neck that sparked faintly as he moved closer to the light.
You could say that, Jace said carefully, not moving his hand away from his belt.
You shouldn't be here. The boy raked a hand through the thick black curls that spilled over his forehead. This place is dangerous. He means it's a bad neighborhood. Clary almost wanted to laugh, even though it wasn't at all funny. We know, she said. We just got a little lost, that's all. The boy gestured to the dumpster. What were you doing with that? I'm no good at lying on the spot, Clary thought, and looked at Jace, who she hoped would be excellent at it. He disappointed her immediately.
We were trying to get into the hotel. We thought there might be a cellar door behind the trash bin.
The boy's eyes widened in disbelief.
Puta madre. Why would you want to do something like that?
Jace shrugged.
For a prank, you know, just a little fun.
You don't understand. This place is haunted, cursed. Bad luck.
He shook his head vigorously and said several things in Spanish that Clary suspected had to do with the stupidity of spoiled white kids in general and their stupidity in particular.
Walk with me. I'll take you to the subway.
We know where the subway is, said Jace.
The boy laughed a soft, vibrant laugh.
Claro, of course you do. But if you go with me, no one will bother you. You do not want trouble, do you?
That depends. Jace said, and moved so that his jacket opened slightly, showing the glint of the weapons thrust through his belt.
How much are they paying you to keep people away from the hotel?
The boy glanced behind him, and Clary's nerves twanged as she imagined the narrow alley mouth filling up with other shadowy figures, white-faced, red-mouthed, the glint of fangs as sudden as metal-striking sparks from pavement. When he looked back at Jace, his mouth was a thin line.
How much are who paying me, Chico?
The vampires. How much are they paying you?
Or is it something else? Did they tell you they'd make you one of them? Offer you eternal life? No pain, no sickness. You get to live forever.
Because it's not worth it. Life stretches out very long when you never see the sunlight, Chico, said Jace. The boy was expressionless.
My name is Raphael, not Chico.
But you know what we're talking about.
You know about the vampires? Clary said.
Raphael turned his face to the side and spit. When he looked back at them, his eyes were full of a glittering hate.
Los vampiros, sí, the blood-drinking animals. Even before the hotel was boarded up, there were stories. The laughter late at night, the small animals disappearing, the sounds.
He stopped, shaking his head.
Everyone in the neighborhood knows to stay away, but what can you do? You cannot call the police and tell them your problem is vampires.
Have you ever seen them? Jace asked, or known anyone who has?
Raphael spoke slowly.
There were some boys once, a group of friends. They thought they had a good idea to go into the hotel and kill the monsters inside. They took guns with them, knives too, all blessed by a priest. They never came out. My aunt, she found their clothes later in front of the house.
Your aunt's house, said Jace.
See, one of the boys was my brother, said Raphael flatly. So now you know why I walk by here in the middle of the night sometimes, on the way home from my aunt's house, and why I warned you away. If you go in there, you will not come out again. My friend is in there, said Clary. We came to get him.
Ah, said Raphael. Then perhaps I cannot warn you away.
No, Jay said. But don't worry. What happened to your friends won't happen to us.
He took one of the angel blades from his belt and held it up. The faint light emanating from it lit the hollows under his cheekbones, shadowed his eyes.
I've killed plenty of vampires before. Their hearts don't beat, but they can still die.
Raphael inhaled sharply and said something in Spanish too low and rapid for Clary to understand. He came toward them, almost stumbling over a pile of crumpled plastic wrappers in his haste.
I know what you are. I've heard about your kind, from the old padre at St. Cecilia's. I thought that was just a story.
All the stories are true, Clary said, but so quietly that he didn't seem to hear her. He was looking at Jace, his fists clenched.
I want to go with you, he said.
Jace shook his head. No, absolutely not.
I can show you how to get inside, Raphael said.
Jace wavered, temptation plain on his face.
We can't bring you.
Fine.
Raphael stalked by him and kicked aside a heap of trash piled against a wall. There was a metal grating there, thin bars filmed with a brownish-red coating of rust. He knelt down, took hold of the bars, and lifted the grating away.
This is how my brother and his friends got in. It goes down to the basement, I think.
He looked up as Jace and Clary joined him. Clary half held her breath. The smell of the garbage was overwhelming, and even in the darkness, she could see the darting shapes of cockroaches crawling over the piles. A thin smile had formed, just at the corners of Jace's mouth. He still had the angel blade in his hand. The witch light that came from it lent his face a ghostly cast, reminding her of the way Simon had held a flashlight under his chin, while telling her horror stories when they were both 11.
Thanks, he said to Raphael. This will work just fine.
The other boy's face was pale. You go in there and do for your friend what I could not do for my brother.
Jace slipped the seraph blade back into his belt and glanced at Clary.
Follow me,
he said, and slid through the grating in a single smooth move, feet first. She held her breath, waiting for a shout of agony or amazement, but there was only the soft thump of feet landing on solid ground.
It's fine, he called up, his voice muffled. Jump down and I'll catch you.
She looked at Raphael.
Thanks for your help.
He said nothing, only held out his hand. She used it to steady herself while she maneuvered into position. His fingers were cold. He let go as she dropped down through the grating. It was only a second's fall, and Jace caught her, her dress rucking up around her thighs and his hand grazing her bare legs as she slid into his arms. He let her go almost immediately.
You all right?
She pulled her dress down, glad he couldn't see her in the dark.
I'm fine.
Jace pulled the dimly glowing angel blade out of his belt and lifted it, letting its growing illumination wash over their surroundings. They were standing in a shallow, low-ceilinged space with a cracked concrete floor. Squares of dirt showed where the floor was broken, and Clary could see that black vines had begun to twine up the walls. A doorway, missing its door, opened onto another room. A loud thump made her start, and she turned to see Raphael landing, knees bent, just a few feet from her. He had followed them through the grating. He straightened up and grinned manically. Jace looked furious.
I told you.
And I heard you. Raphael waved a dismissive hand. What are you gonna do about it? I can't get back out the way we came in, and you can't just leave me here for the dead to find, can you?
I'm thinking about it, Jace said.
He looked tired, Clary saw with some surprise, the shadows under his eyes more pronounced. Raphael pointed.
We must go that way, toward the stairs. They're up on the higher floors of the hotel. You will see.
He pushed past Jace and through the narrow doorway. Jace looked after him, shaking his head.
I'm really starting to hate mundanes, he said.
The lower floor of the hotel was a warren of maze-like corridors opening onto empty storage rooms, a deserted laundry, moldy stacks of linen towels piled high in rotted wicker baskets, even a ghostly kitchen, banks of stainless steel counters stretching away into the shadows. Most of the staircases leading upstairs were gone, not rotted, but deliberately chopped away, reduced to stacks of kindling shoved against walls, bits of once luxurious Persian carpet clinging to them like blossoms of furry mold. The missing stairs baffled Clary. What did vampires have against stairs? They finally found an unharmed set tucked away behind the laundry. Maids must have used it to carry linens up and down the stairs in the days before elevators. Dust lay thick on the steps now, like a layer of powdery gray snow that made Clary cough.
Shh, hissed Raphael. They will hear you. We are close to where they sleep. How do you know? She whispered back. He wasn't even supposed to be there. What gave him the right to lecture her about noise? I can feel it.
The corner of his eye twitched, and she saw that he was as scared as she was.
Can't you?
She shook her head. She felt nothing other than strangely cold. After the stifling heat of the night outside, the chill inside the hotel was intense. At the top of the stairs was a door on which the painted word lobby was barely legible beneath years of accumulated dirt. The door sprayed rust when Jace pushed it open. Clary braced herself, but the room beyond was empty. They were in a large foyer, its rotting carpeting torn back to show the splintered floorboards beneath. Once the centerpiece of this room had been a grand staircase, gracefully curving, lined with gilt banisters and richly carpeted in gold and scarlet. Now all that remained were the higher steps leading up into blackness. The remainder of the staircase ended just above their heads in midair. The sight was as surreal as one of the abstract Magritte paintings Jocelyn had loved. This one, Clary thought, would be called The Stairs to Nowhere. Her voice sounded as dry as the dust that coated everything.
What do vampires have against stairs?
Nothing, said Jace. They just don't need to use them.
It is a way of showing that this place is one of theirs.
Raphael's eyes were bright. He seemed almost excited. Jace glanced at him sideways.
Have you ever actually seen a vampire, Raphael? He asked.
Raphael glanced at him almost absently.
I know what they look like. They are paler, thinner than human beings, but very strong. They walk like cats and spring with the swiftness of serpents. They are beautiful and terrible, like this hotel.
You think it's beautiful? Clary asked, surprised.
You can see where it was years ago, like an old woman who was once beautiful, but time has taken her beauty away. You must imagine this staircase the way it was once, with the gas lamps burning all up and down the steps, like fireflies in the dark, and the balconies full of people. Not the way it is now, so...
He broke off, searching for a word.
Truncated? Jace suggested dryly.
Raphael looked almost startled, as if Jace had broken him out of a reverie. He laughed shakily and turned away. Clary turned to Jace.
Where are they anyway? The vampires, I mean.
Upstairs, probably. They like to be high up when they sleep, like bats. and it's nearly sunrise.
Like puppets with their heads attached to strings, Clary and Raphael both looked up at the same time. There was nothing above them but the frescoed ceiling, cracked and black in places as if it had been burned in a fire. An archway to their left led farther into darkness. The pillars on either side were engraved with a motif of leaves and flowers. As Raphael glanced back down, a scar at the base of his throat, very white against his brown skin, flashed like a winking eye. She wondered how he'd gotten it.
"I think we should go back to the servant stairs," she whispered. "I feel too exposed out here."
Jace nodded.
"You realize, once we get there, you'll have to call out for Simon and hope he can hear you."
She wondered if the fear she felt showed on her face. Her words were cut short by a blood-curdling scream. Clary whirled. Raphael. He was gone. No marks in the dust, showing where he might have walked or been dragged.
She reached for Jace reflexively, but he was already moving, running toward the gaping arch in the far wall and the shadows beyond.
She couldn't see him, but followed the darting witchlight he carried, like a traveler being led through a swamp by a treacherous will-o'-the-wisp. Beyond the arch was what had once been a grand ballroom. The ruined floor was white marble, now so badly cracked that it resembled a sea of floating Arctic ice. Curved balconies ran along the walls, their railings veiled in rust. Gold-framed mirrors hung at intervals between them, each crowned with a gilded cupid's head. Spiderwebs drifted in the clammy air like ancient wedding veils. Raphael was standing in the center of the room, his arms at his sides. Clary ran to him, Jace following more slowly behind her.
"Are you all right?" she asked breathlessly.
He nodded slowly.
"I thought I saw a movement in the shadows. It was nothing." "We've decided to head back to the servant stairs," Jace said. "There's nothing on this floor."
Raphael nodded.
"Good idea."
He headed for the door, not looking to see if they followed. He had gotten only a few steps when Jace said,
"Raphael!"
Raphael turned, eyes widening inquisitively, and Jace threw his knife. Raphael's reflexes were quick, but not quick enough. The blade struck home, the force of the impact knocking him over. His feet went out from under him, and he fell heavily to the cracked marble floor. In the dim witchlight, his blood looked black.
"Jace!"
Clary hissed in disbelief, shock pounding through her. He said he'd hated mundanes, but he'd never... As she turned to go to Raphael, Jace shoved her brutally aside. He flung himself on the other boy and grabbed for the knife sticking out of Raphael's chest. But Raphael was faster. He seized the knife, then screamed as his hand came in contact with the cross-shaped hilt. It clattered to the marble floor, blade smeared black. Jace had one hand fisted in the material of Raphael's shirt, Sanvi in the other. It was glowing with such a bright light that Clary could see colors again. The peeling royal blue of the wallpaper, the gold flecks in the marble floor, the red stain spreading across Raphael's chest. But Raphael was laughing. "You missed," he said, and grinned for the first time, showing pointed white incisors. "You missed my heart." Jace tightened his grip. "You moved at the last minute," he said. "That was very inconsiderate."
Raphael frowned and spat red. Clary stepped back, staring in dawning horror.
"When did you figure it out?" he demanded.
His accent had faded, his words more precise and clipped now.
"I guessed in the alley," Jace said, "but I figured you'd get us inside the hotel, then turn on us. Once we'd trespassed, we'd have been out of the protection of the Covenant. Fair game. When you didn't, I thought I might have been wrong. Then I saw that scar on your throat."
He sat back a little, still holding the blade at Raphael's throat.
"I thought when I first saw that chain that it looked like the sort you'd hang a cross from. And you did, didn't you, when you went out to see your family? What's the scar of a little burn when your kind heals so quickly?"
Raphael laughed.
"Was that all? My scar? When you left the foyer, your feet didn't leave marks in the dust. Then I knew."
"It wasn't your brother who went in here looking for monsters and never came out, was it?"
Clary said, realizing.
"It was you."
"You are both very clever," Raphael said,
"although not quite clever enough. Look up," he said, and lifted a hand to point at the ceiling. Jace knocked the hand away without moving his glance from Raphael.
"Clary, what do you see?"
She raised her head slowly, dread curdling in the pit of her stomach.
You must imagine this staircase the way it was once, with the gas lamps burning all up and down the steps, like fireflies in the dark, and the balconies full of people.
They were filled with people now, row on row of vampires with their dead white faces, their red stretched mouths, staring bemusedly downward. Jace was still looking at Raphael.
You called them, didn't you?
Raphael was still grinning. The blood had stopped spreading from the wound in his chest.
Does it matter? There are too many of them, even for you, Wayland.
Jace said nothing. Though he hadn't moved, he was breathing in short, quick pants, and Clary could almost feel the strength of his desire to kill the vampire boy, to shove the knife through his heart and wipe that grin off his face forever.
Jace, she said warningly, don't kill him.
Why not?
Maybe we can use him as a hostage.
Jace's eyes widened.
A hostage?
She could see them, more of them, filling the arched doorway, moving as silently as the brothers of the Bone City. But the brothers had not had skin so white and colorless, nor teeth as sharp as needles. Clary licked her dry lips.
I know what I'm doing. Get him on his feet, Jace.
Jace looked at her, then shrugged.
All right.
Raphael snapped.
This isn't funny.
That's why no one's laughing.
Jace stood, hauling Raphael upright, jamming the tip of his knife between Raphael's shoulder blades.
I can pierce your heart just as easily through your back, he said.
I wouldn't move if I were you.
Clary turned away from them to face the oncoming dark shapes. She flung out a hand.
Stop right there, she said, or he'll put that blade through Raphael's heart.
A sort of murmur ran through the crowd that could have been whispering or laughter.
Stop,
Clary said again, and this time Jace did something, she didn't see what, that made Raphael cry out in surprised pain. One of the vampires flung an arm out to hold back his companions. Clary recognized him as the thin blonde boy with the earring that she'd seen at Magnus's party.
She means it, he said. They are shadow hunters.
Another vampire pushed her way through the crowd to stand at his side, a pretty blue-haired Asian girl in a silver foil skirt. Clary wondered if there were any ugly vampires, or maybe any fat ones. Maybe they didn't make vampires out of ugly people, or maybe ugly people just didn't want to live forever.
Shadow hunters trespassing on our territory, she said. They are out of the protection of the Covenant. I say we kill them. They've killed enough of ours.
Which of you is the master of this place? Jace said, his voice very flat. Let him step forward.
The girl bared her pointed teeth.
Do not use clave language on us, Shadow Hunter. You have broken your precious covenant coming in here. The law will not protect you.
That's enough, Lily, said the blonde boy sharply. Our master is not here. She is in Idris.
Someone must rule you in her stead, Jace observed.
There was a silence. The vampires up in the balconies were hanging off the railings, leaning down to hear what was being said. Finally,
Raphael leads us, said the blonde vampire.
The blue-haired girl, Lily, let out a hiss of disapproval.
Jacob! I propose a trade, Clary said quickly, cutting off Lily's tirade and Jacob's retort.
By now, you must know you took home too many people from the party tonight. One of them was my friend Simon.
Jacob raised his eyebrows.
You're friends with a vampire.
He's not a vampire, and not a shadow hunter either, she added, seeing Lily's pale eyes narrow. Just an ordinary human boy.
We didn't take any human boys home with us from Magnus's party. That would have been a violation of the Covenant.
He'd been transformed into a rat, a small brown rat, said Clary. Someone might have thought he was a pet, or...
Her voice trailed off. They were staring at her as if she were insane. Cold despair seeped into her bones.
Let me get this straight, Lily said. You're offering to trade Raphael's life for a rat?
Clary looked helplessly back at Jace. He gave her a look that said,
This was your idea. You're on your own.
Yes, she said, turning back to the vampires. That's the trade we're offering.
They stared at her, white faces nearly expressionless. In another context, Clary would have said that they looked baffled. She could feel Jace standing behind her, hear the rasp of his breathing. She wondered if he was racking his brain, trying to figure out why he'd let her drag them both here in the first place. She wondered if he was starting to hate her.
Do you mean this rat?
Clary blinked. Another vampire, a thin black boy with dreadlocks, had pushed his way to the front of the crowd. He was holding something in his hands, something brown that squirmed feebly.
Simon? She whispered.
The rat squeaked and started to thrash wildly in the boy's grip. He looked down at the captive rodent with an expression of distaste.
Man, I thought he was Zeke. I wondered why he was copping such an attitude.
He shook his head, dreadlocks bouncing.
I say she can have him, dude. He's already bitten me 5 times.
Clary reached out for Simon, her hands aching to hold him. But Lily stepped in front of her before she could take more than a step in his direction.
Wait, Lily said. How do we know you won't just take the rat and kill Raphael anyway?
We'll give our word, Clary said immediately, then tensed, waiting for them to laugh.
Nobody laughed. Raphael swore softly in Spanish. Lily looked curiously at Jace.
Clary, he said.
There was an undercurrent of exasperated desperation in his voice.
Is this really a... No oath, no trade, said Lily immediately, seizing on his uncertain tone. Elliot, hold on to that rat.
The dreadlocked boy tightened his grip on Simon, who sank his teeth savagely into Elliot's hand.
Man, he said glumly, that hurt.
Clary took the opportunity to whisper to Jace.
Just swear, what can it hurt? Swearing for us isn't like it is for you mundanes, he snapped back angrily. I'll be bound forever to any oath I make. Oh yeah? What would happen if you broke it? I wouldn't break it, that's the point.
Lily is right, said Jacob. An oath is required. Swear that you won't hurt Raphael, even if we give you the rat back.
I won't hurt Raphael, Clary said immediately, no matter what.
Lily smiled at her tolerantly.
It isn't you we're worried about.
She shot a pointed look at Jace, who was holding Raphael so tightly that his knuckles were white. A patch of sweat darkened the cloth of his shirt, just between his shoulder blades. He said,
All right, I swear it.
Speak the oath, Lily said swiftly. Swear on the angel. Say it all.
Jace shook his head.
You swear first.
His words fell into the silence like stones, sending a rippling murmur through the crowd. Jacob looked concerned, Lily furious.
Not a chance, Shadow Hunter.
We have your leader.
The tip of Jace's knife dug farther into Raphael's throat.
And what have you got there? A rat?
Simon, pinned in Elliot's hands, squeaked furiously. Clary longed to snatch him up, but held herself back.
Jace.
Lily looked toward Raphael.
Master?
Raphael had his head down, his dark curls falling to hide his face. Blood stained the collar of his shirt, trickled down the bare brown skin underneath.
A pretty important rat, he said, for you to come all the way here for him. It is you, Shadow Hunter, I think, who will swear first.
Jace's grip on him tightened convulsively. Clary saw the swell of the muscles under his skin, the whitening of his fingers, and at the sides of his mouth as he fought his anger.
The rat's a mundane, he said sharply. If you kill him, you'll be subject to the law. He is on our territory. Trespassers are not protected by the Covenant, you know that.
You brought him here, Clary interjected. He didn't trespass.
Technicalities, said Raphael, grinning at her despite the knife at his throat. Besides, you think we do not hear the rumors? The news that is running through Downworld like blood through veins? Valentine is back. There will be no accords and no covenant soon enough.
Jace's head jerked up.
Where did you hear that?
Raphael frowned scornfully.
All Downworld knows it. He paid a warlock to raise a pack of raveners only a week ago. He has brought his Forsaken to seek the mortal cup. When he finds it, there will be no more false peace between us, only war. No law will prevent me from tearing your heart out on the street, Shadow Hunter.
That was enough for Clary. She dove for Simon, shouldering Lily aside, and snatched the rat out of Elliot's hands. Simon scrabbled up her arm, gripping her sleeve with frantic paws.
It's okay, she whispered. It's okay.
Though she knew it wasn't. She turned to run and felt hands catch at her jacket, holding her. She struggled, but her efforts to tear herself free of the hands that held her, Lily's, narrow and bony with black fingernails, were hampered by her fear of dislodging Simon, who clung to her with paws and teeth.
"Let go!"
she screamed, kicking out at the vampire girl. Her booted toe connected hard, and Lily shouted in pain and rage. She whipped her hand forward, striking Clary's cheek with enough force to rock her head back. Clary staggered and nearly fell. She heard Jace shout her name and turned to see that he had let go of Raphael and was racing toward her. Clary tried to go to him, but her shoulders were gripped by Jacob, his fingers digging into her skin. Clary cried out, and the noise was lost in a larger shriek as Jace, snatching one of the glass vials from his jacket, flung its contents toward her. She felt cool wetness splash her face and heard Jacob scream as the water touched his skin. Smoke rose from his fingers and he released Clary, howling a high animal howl. Lily darted toward him, crying out his name, and in the pandemonium, Clary felt someone seize her wrist. She struggled to yank herself away.
"Stop it, you idiot, it's me," Jace panted in her ear.
"Oh." She relaxed momentarily, then tensed again, seeing a familiar shape loom up behind Jace. She cried out, and Jace ducked and spun just as Raphael leaped at him, teeth bared, quick as a cat. His fangs caught Jace's shirt near the shoulder and tore the fabric lengthwise as Jace staggered. Raphael clung on like a gripping spider, teeth snapping at Jace's throat. Clary fumbled in her pack for the dagger Jace had given her. A small brown shape streaked across the floor, shot between Clary's feet, and launched itself at Raphael. Raphael screamed. Simon hung grimly from his forearm, his sharp rat teeth sunk deep into the flesh. Raphael let go of Jace, flailing backward, blood spurting as a stream of Spanish obscenities poured from his mouth. Jace gaped, his mouth open.
"Son of a—"
Regaining his balance, Raphael tore the rat free from his arm and flung him to the marble floor. Simon squeaked once in pain, then dashed over to Clary. She bent down and snatched him up, holding him against her chest as tightly as she could without hurting him. She could feel the hammering beat of his tiny heart against her fingers.
"Simon," she whispered. "Simon." "There's no time for that. Hold on to him."
Jace had caught at her right arm, gripping with painful force. In the other hand, he held a glowing serif blade.
"Move."
He began to half-pull, half-push her to the edge of the crowd. The vampires winced away from the light of the serif blade as it swept over them, all of them hissing like scalded cats.
"Enough standing around."
It was Raphael. His arm was streaming blood, his lips curled back from his pointed incisors. He glared at the teeming mass of vampires milling in confusion.
"Seize the trespassers," he shouted. "Kill them both, the rat as well."
The vampires started toward Jason Clary, some of them walking, others gliding, others swooping down from the balconies above like flapping black bats. Jace increased his pace as they broke free of the crowd, heading toward the far wall. Clary squirmed, half turning to look up at him.
"Shouldn't we stand back to back or something?" "What? Why?"
"I don't know. In movies, that's what they do in this kind of situation." She felt him shake. Was he frightened? No, he was laughing.
"You," he breathed. "You are the most—"
"The most what?" she demanded indignantly. They were still backing up, stepping carefully to avoid the broken bits of furniture and smashed marble that littered the floor. Jace held the angel blade high above both their heads. She could see how the vampires circled around the edges of the glimmering circlet cast. She wondered how long it would hold them off.
"Nothing," he said. "This isn't a situation, okay? I save that word for when things get really bad."
"Really bad? This isn't really bad? What do you want, a nuclear—" She broke off with a scream as Lily, braving the light, launched herself at Jace, her teeth bared in a searing snarl. Jace seized the second blade from his belt and hurled it through the air. Lily fell back screeching, a long gash sizzling down her arm. As she staggered, the other vampires surged forward around her. There were so many of them, Clary thought. So many. She fumbled at her belt, her fingers closing around the hilt of the dagger. It felt cold and foreign in her hand. She didn't know how to use a knife. She'd never hit anyone, let alone stab them. She'd even skipped gym class the day they'd learned how to ward off muggers and rapists with ordinary objects like car keys and pencils. She pulled the knife free, raised it in a shaking hand. The windows exploded inward in a shower of broken glass. She heard herself cry out, saw the vampires, barely an arm's length from her and Jace,
whirl in astonishment, shock mingling with terror on their faces. Through the shattered windows came dozens of sleek shapes, four-footed and low to the ground, their coats scattering moonlight and broken bits of glass. Their eyes were blue fire, and from their throats came a combined low growl that sounded like the roiling crash of a waterfall. Wolves.
"Now this," said Jace, "is a situation."
Chapter 15. High and Dry. The wolves crouched, low and snarling, and the vampires, looking stunned, backed away. Only Raphael held his ground. He still clutched his wounded arm, his shirt a smeared mess of blood and dirt.
"Los niños de la luna," he hissed.
Even Clary, whose Spanish was almost non-existent, knew what he had said. The moon's children. Werewolves.
"I thought they hated each other," she whispered to Jace. "Vampires and werewolves."
"They do. They never come to each other's lairs. Never. The Covenant forbids it."
He sounded almost indignant.
"Something must have happened. This is bad. Very bad."
"How can it be worse than it was before?"
"Because," he said, "we're about to be in the middle of a war." "How dare you enter our place?" Raphael screamed. His face was scarlet, suffused with blood.
The largest of the wolves, a brindled gray monster with teeth like a shark's, gave a panting dog-like chuckle. As he moved forward, between one step and the next, he seemed to shift and change like a wave rising and curling. Now he was a tall, heavily muscled man with long hair that hung in gray rope-like tangles. He wore jeans and a thick leather jacket, and there was still something wolfish in the cast of his lean, weathered face.
"We didn't come for a blooding," he said. "We came for the girl."
Raphael managed to look furious and astounded at once.
"Who?" "The human girl."
The werewolf flung out a stiff arm, pointing at Clary. She was too shocked to move. Simon, who had been squirming in her grasp, went still. Behind her, Jace muttered something that sounded distinctly blasphemous.
"You didn't tell me you knew any werewolves."
She could hear the slight catch under his flat tone. He was as surprised as she was.
"I don't," she said.
"This is bad," said Jace.
"You said that before."
"It seemed worth repeating."
"Well, it wasn't."
Clary shrank back against him.
"Jace, they're all looking at me."
Every face was turned to her. Most looked astonished. Raphael's eyes were narrowed. He turned back to the werewolf slowly.
"You can't have her," he said. "She trespassed on our ground. Therefore, she's ours."
The werewolf laughed.
"I'm so glad you said that," he said,
and launched himself forward. In midair, his body rippled, and he was again a wolf, coat bristling, jaws gaping, ready to tear. He struck Raphael square in the chest, and the two went over in a writhing, snarling tangle. With answering howls of rage, they charged the werewolves, who met them head-on in the center of the ballroom. The noise was like nothing Clary had ever heard. If Bosch's paintings of hell had come with a soundtrack, they would have sounded like this. Jace whistled.
"Raphael is really having an exceptionally bad night."
"So what?"
Clary had no sympathy for the vampire.
"What are we gonna do?"
He glanced around. They were pinned in a corner by the churning mass of bodies. Though they were being ignored for now, it wouldn't be for long. Before Clary could voice this thought, Simon suddenly squirmed violently free of her grasp and leaped to the floor.
"Simon!"
she screamed as he dashed for the corner and a moldering pile of rotted velvet drapes.
"Simon, stop!"
Jace's eyebrows made quizzical peaks.
"What is he?"
He grabbed for her arm, jerking her back.
"Clary, don't chase the rat. He's fleeing. That's what rats do."
She shot him a furious look.
"He's not a rat. He's Simon. And he bit Raphael for you, you ungrateful cretin."
She yanked her arm free and dashed after Simon, who was crouched in the folds of the drapes, chittering excitedly and pawing at them. Belatedly realizing what he was trying to tell her, she yanked the drapes aside. They were slimy with mold, but behind them was...
"A door," she breathed. "You genius rat."
Simon squeaked modestly as she snatched him up. Jace was right behind her.
"A door, huh? Well, does it open?
She grabbed for the knob and turned to him, crestfallen.
It's locked. Or stuck.
Jace threw himself against the door. It didn't budge. He cursed.
My shoulder will never be the same.
I expect you to nurse me back to health.
Just break the door down, will you?
He looked past her with wide eyes.
Clary!
She turned. A huge wolf had broken away from the melee and was racing toward her, ears flattened to its narrow head. It was huge, gray-black and brindled, with a long, lolling red tongue. Clary screamed. Jace threw himself against the door again, still cursing. She reached for her belt, grabbed the dagger, and threw it. She'd never thrown a weapon before, never even thought of throwing one. The closest she'd come to weaponry before this week was drawing pictures of them. So Clary was more surprised than anyone else, she suspected, when the dagger flew, wobbly but true, and sank into the werewolf's side. It yelped, slowing, but three of its comrades were already racing toward them. One paused at the side of the wounded wolf, but the others charged for the door. Clary screamed again as Jace hurled his body against the door a third time. It gave with an explosive shriek of grinding rust and tearing wood.
Three times the charm, he panted, holding his shoulder.
He ducked into the dark space that gaped beyond the broken door and turned to hold out an impatient hand.
Clary, come on!
With a gasp, she darted after him and flung the door shut, just as two heavy bodies thudded against it. She fumbled for the bolt, but it was gone, torn away where Jace had broken through it.
Duck,
he said, and as she did, the steely whipped over her head, slicing dark lines into the moldering wood of the door. She craned her neck to see what he'd carved. A curve like a sickle, three parallel lines, a rayed star, to hold against pursuit.
I lost your dagger, she confessed. I'm sorry.
It happens. He pocketed the steely. She could hear the faint thuds as the wolves hurled themselves against the door again and again, but it held.
The rune will keep them back, but not for long. We'd better hurry.
She looked up. They were in a dank passageway. A narrow set of stairs led up into the darkness. The steps were wood, the banisters filmy with dust. Simon thrust his nose out of her jacket pocket, his black button eyes glittering in the dim light.
All right, she nodded at Jace. You go first.
Jace looked as if he wanted to grin but was too tired.
You know how I like to be first.
But slowly, he added.
I'm not sure the stairs can hold our weight.
Clary wasn't sure either. The steps creaked and groaned as they ascended, like an old woman complaining about her aches and pains. Clary gripped the banister for balance, and a chunk of it snapped off in her hand, making her squeak and wringing an exhausted chuckle out of Jace. He took her hand.
Here, steady.
Simon made a sound that, for a rat, sounded a lot like a snort. Jace didn't seem to hear it. They were stumbling up the steps as rapidly as they dared. The flight rose in a high spiral up through the building. They passed landing after landing, but no doors. They had reached the fourth featureless turn when a muffled explosion rocked the stairwell, and a cloud of dust billowed upward.
They've gotten past the door, Jace said grimly. Damn, I thought it would hold for longer.
Do we run now? Clary inquired.
Now we run, he said,
and they thundered up the stairs, which shrieked and wailed under their weight, nails popping like gunfire. They were at the fifth landing now. She could hear the soft thud-thud of the wolf's paws on the steps far below, or perhaps it was just her imagination. She knew there wasn't really hot breath on the back of her neck, but the snarls and howls, getting louder as they came closer, were real and terrifying. The sixth landing rose in front of them, and they half flung themselves onto it. Clary was gasping, her breath sawing painfully in her lungs, but she managed a weak cheer when she saw the door. It was heavy steel, riveted with nails, and propped open with a brick. She barely had time to wonder why when Jace kicked it open, pushed her through, and following, slammed it shut. She heard a definitive click as it locked behind them.
Thank God, she thought.
Then she turned around. The night sky wheeled above her, scattered with stars like a handful of loose diamonds. It was not black, but a clear dark blue, the color of oncoming dawn. They were standing on a bare slate roof turreted with brick chimneys. An old water tower, black with neglect, stood on a raised platform at one end. A heavy tarpaulin concealed a lumpy pile of lumber at the other.
"This must be how they get in and out," Jace said, glancing back at the door.
Clary could see him properly now in the pale light, the lines of strain around his eyes like shallow cuts. The blood on his clothes, mostly Raphael's, looked black.
"They fly up here. Not that that does us much good."
"There might be a fire escape," Clary suggested.
Together, they picked their way gingerly to the edge of the roof. Clary had never liked heights, and the 10-floor drop to the street made her stomach spin. So did the sight of the fire escape, a twisted, unusable hunk of metal still clinging to the side of the hotel's stone facade.
"Or not," she said.
She glanced back at the door they had emerged from. It was set into a cabin-like structure in the center of the roof. It was vibrating, the knob jerking wildly. It would only hold for a few more minutes, perhaps less. Jace pressed the backs of his hands against his eyes. The leaden air bore down on them, making the back of Clary's neck prickle. She could see the sweat trickling into his collar. She wished, irrelevantly, that it would rain. Rain would burst this heat bubble like a pricked blister. Jace was muttering to himself.
"Think, Wayland, think."
Something began to take shape in the back of Clary's mind. A rune danced against the backs of her eyelids, two downward triangles joined by a single bar, a rune like a pair of wings.
"That's it," Jace breathed, dropping his hands,
and for a startled moment, Clary wondered if he had read her mind. He looked feverish, his gold-flecked eyes very bright.
"I can't believe I didn't think of it before."
He dashed to the far end of the roof, then paused and looked back at her. She was still standing dazed, her thoughts full of glimmering shapes.
"Come on, Clary."
She followed him, pushing thoughts of runes from her mind. He had reached the tarpaulin and was tugging at the edge of it. It came away, revealing not junk, but sparkling chrome, tooled leather, and gleaming paint.
"Motorcycles?"
Jace reached for the nearest one, an enormous dark red Harley with gold flames on the tank and fenders. He swung a leg over it and looked over his shoulder at her.
"Get on."
Clary stared.
"Are you kidding? Do you even know how to drive that thing? Do you have keys?"
"I don't need keys," he explained with infinite patience. "It runs on demon energies. Now, are you going to get on, or do you want to ride your own?"
Numbly, Clary slid onto the bike behind him. Somewhere, in some part of her brain, a tiny voice was screaming about what a bad idea this was.
"Good," Jace said. "Now put your arms around me."
She did, feeling the hard muscles of his abdomen contract as he leaned forward and jammed the point of the steely into the ignition. To her amazement, she felt the motorcycle thrum to life under her. In her pocket, Simon squeaked loudly.
"Everything's okay," she said, as soothingly as she could.
"Jace," she shouted over the sound of the motorcycle's engine. "What are you doing?"
He yelled back something that sounded like,
"Pushing in the choke."
Clary blinked.
"Well, hurry it up. The door."
On cue, the roof door burst open with a crash, torn from its hinges. Wolves poured through the gap, racing across the roof straight at them. Above them flew the vampires, hissing and screeching, filling the night with predatory cries. She felt Jace's arm jerk back and the motorcycle lurch forward, sending her stomach slamming into her spine. She clutched convulsively at Jace's belt as they shot forward, tires skidding along the slates, scattering the wolves, who yelped as they leaped aside. She heard Jace shout something, his words torn away by the noise of wheels and wind and engine. The edge of the roof was coming up fast, so fast, and Clary wanted to shut her eyes, but something held them wide open as the motorcycle hurtled over the parapet and plummeted like a rock toward the ground, 10 stories down. If Clary screamed, she didn't remember it later. It was like the first drop on a roller coaster, where the track falls away and you feel yourself hurtling through space, your hands waving uselessly in the air, and your stomach jammed up around your ears. When the cycle righted itself with a sputter and a jerk, she almost wasn't surprised. Instead of plunging downward, they were now hurtling up toward the diamond-littered sky. Clary glanced back and saw a cluster of vampires standing on the roof of the hotel, surrounded by wolves. She looked away. If she never saw that hotel again, it'd be too soon.
Jace was yelling, loud whooping shrieks of delight and relief. Clary leaned forward, her arms tight around him.
My mother always told me if I rode a motorcycle with a boy, she'd kill me, she called over the noise of the wind whipping past her ears and the deafening rumble of the engine.
She couldn't hear him laugh, but she felt his body shake.
She wouldn't say that if she knew me, he called back to her confidently. I'm an excellent driver.
Belatedly, Clary recollected something.
I thought you said only some of the vampire bikes could fly.
Deftly, Jay steered them around a stoplight in the process of turning from red to green. Below, Clary could hear cars honking, ambulance sirens wailing, and buses puffing to their stops, but she didn't dare look down.
Only some of them can.
How did you know this was one of them?
I didn't,
he shouted gleefully, and did something that made the bike rise almost vertically into the air. Clary shrieked and grabbed for his belt again.
You should look down, Jace shouted. It's awesome.
Sheer curiosity forced its way past terror and vertigo. Swallowing hard, Clary opened her eyes. They were higher than she had realized, and for a moment the earth swung dizzily beneath her, a blurring landscape of shadow and light. They were flying east, away from the park, toward the highway that snaked along the right bank of the city. There was a numbness in Clary's hands, a hard pressure in her chest. It was lovely, she could see that. The city rising up beside her like a towering forest of silver and glass, the dull gray shimmer of the East River, slicing between Manhattan and the boroughs like a scar. The wind was cool in her hair, on her bare legs, delicious after so many days of heat and stickiness. Still, she'd never flown, not even in an airplane, and the vast empty space between them and the ground terrified her. She couldn't keep from squinching her eyes almost shut as they shot out over the river. Just below the Queensboro Bridge, Jace turned the bike south and headed to the foot of the island. The sky had begun to lighten, and in the distance, Clary could see the glittering arch of the Brooklyn Bridge, and beyond that, a smudge on the horizon, the Statue of Liberty.
Are you all right? Jace shouted.
Clary said nothing, just clutched him more tightly. He banked the cycle, and then they were sailing toward the bridge, and Clary could see stars through the suspension cables. An early morning train was rattling over it, the queue, carrying a load of sleepy dawn commuters. She thought how often she'd been on that train. A wave of vertigo swamped her, and she squeezed her eyes shut, gasping with nausea.
Clary, Jace called. Clary, are you all right?
She shook her head, eyes still shut, alone in the dark and the tearing wind with just the pounding of her heart. Something sharp scratched against her chest. She ignored it until it came again, more insistent. Barely opening an eye, she saw that it was Simon, his head poking out of her pocket, tugging her shirt with an urgent paw.
It's all right, Simon, she said with an effort, not looking down. It was just the bridge.
He scratched her again, then pointed an urgent paw toward the waterfront of Brooklyn, rising up on their left. Dizzy and sick, she looked and saw, beyond the outlines of the warehouses and factories, a sliver of golden sunrise just visible, like the edge of a pale gilt coin.
Yes, very pretty, Clary said, closing her eyes again. Nice sunrise.
Jace went rigid all over, as if he'd been shot.
Sunrise?
He yelled, then jerked the cycle savagely to the right. Clary's eyes flew open as they plunged toward the water, which had begun to shimmer with the blue of oncoming dawn. Clary leaned as close to Jace as she could get without squashing Simon between them.
What's so bad about sunrise?
I told you, the bike runs on demon energies.
He pulled back so that they were level with the river, just skimming along the surface with the wheels kicking up spray. River water splashed into Clary's face.
As soon as the sun comes up,
the bike began to sputter. Jace swore colorfully, slamming his fist into the accelerator. The bike lunged forward once, then choked, jerking under them like a bucking horse. Jace was still swearing as the sun peeked over the crumbling wharves of Brooklyn, lighting the world with devastating clarity. Clary could see every rock,
every pebble under them as they cleared the river and hurtled over the narrow bank. Below them was the highway, already streaming with early traffic. They only just cleared it, the wheels grazing the roof of a passing truck. Beyond was the trash-strewn parking lot of an enormous supermarket.
"Hang on to me,"
Jace was shouting as the bike jerked and sputtered underneath them.
"Hang on to me, Clary, and do not let—"
The bike tilted and struck the asphalt of the parking lot, front wheel first. It shot forward, wobbling violently, and went into a long skid, bouncing and slamming over the uneven ground, whipping Clary's head back and forth with neck-cracking force. The air stank of burned rubber, but the bike was slowing, skidding to a halt, and then it struck a concrete parking barrier with such force that she was lifted into the air and hurled sideways, her hand tearing free of Jace's belt. She barely had time to curl herself into a protective ball, holding her arms as rigid as possible and praying Simon wouldn't be crushed, when they struck the ground. She hit hard, agony screaming up her arm. Something splashed up in her face, and she was coughing as she flipped over, rolling onto her back. She grabbed for her pocket. It was empty. She tried to say Simon's name, but the breath had been knocked out of her. She wheezed as she gasped in air. Her face was wet and dampness was running down into her collar.
"Is that blood?"
She opened her eyes hazily. Her face felt like one big bruise, her arms aching and stinging like raw meat. She had rolled onto her side and was lying half in and half out of a puddle of filthy water. Dawn had truly come. She could see the remains of the bike, subsiding into a heap of unrecognizable ash as the sun's rays struck it. And there was Jace, getting painfully to his feet. He started to hurry toward her, then slowed as he approached. The sleeve of his jacket had been torn away and there was a long bloody graze along his left arm. His face, under the cap of dark gold curls matted with sweat, dust and blood, was white as a sheet. She wondered why he looked like that. Was her torn-off leg lying across the parking lot somewhere in a pool of blood? She started to struggle up and felt a hand on her shoulder.
"Clary? Simon!"
He was kneeling next to her, blinking as if he couldn't quite believe it either. His clothes were crumpled and grimy, and he had lost his glasses somewhere, but he seemed otherwise unharmed. Without the glasses, he looked younger, defenseless, and a little dazed. He reached to touch her face, but she flinched back.
"Ow!
Are you okay? You look great,"
he said, with a catch in his voice.
"The best thing I've ever seen."
"That's because you don't have your glasses on,"
she said weakly, but if she'd expected a smart-aleck response, she didn't get one. Instead, he threw his arms around her, holding her tightly to him. His clothes smelled of blood and sweat and dirt, and his heart was beating a mile a minute, and he was pressing on her bruises, but it was a relief nevertheless to be held by him and to know, really know, that he was all right.
"Clary," he said roughly, I thought you
wouldn't come back for you, but of course I did," she said. "Of course I did." She put her arms around him. Everything about him was familiar, from the overwashed fabric of his t-shirt to the sharp angle of the collarbone that rested just under her chin. He said her name, and she stroked his back reassuringly. When she glanced back just for a moment, she saw Jace turning away as if the brightness of the rising sun hurt his eyes. Chapter 16, Falling Angels. Hodge was enraged. He had been standing in the foyer, Isabel and Alec lurking behind him, when Clary and the boys limped in, filthy and covered in blood, and had immediately launched into a lecture that would have done Clary's mother proud. He didn't forget to include the part about lying to him about where they were going, which Jace apparently had, or the part about never trusting Jace again, and even added extra embellishments, like some bits about breaking the law, getting tossed out of the clave, and bringing shame on the proud and ancient name of Wayland. Winding down, he fixed Jace with a glare.
"You've endangered other people with your willfulness. This is one incident I will not allow you to shrug off."
"I wasn't planning to," Jace said. "I can't shrug anything off. My shoulder's dislocated."
"If only I thought physical pain was actually a deterrent for you," said Hodge with grim fury. But you'll just spend the next few days in the infirmary with Alec and Isabel fussing around you. You'll probably even enjoy it.
Hodge had been 2/3 right.